As you heard from so many of us, it's one story and one story told through different voices. And so my voice is not mine this morning. It really is the community's voice, and I'm humbled to be that voice. I spent, as Aubrey said, a significant part of my career working in the federal government, but an even longer part of my entire career working in communities. I wouldn't know what else to do. But working in the federal government, I've seen so many very dedicated people not being acknowledged as unsung heroes. And so I'm going to do it very bluntly today. Please join me in recognizing Dr. Linda Birnbaum for all her leadership. So here's the bottom line. As a good communicator, you always give your message three times. So here is the first time I'm giving my message. One, the health of the ecosystem and that of people are inextricably linked. So you can't have one without the other. Secondly, as you've heard from previous presentations, and I call them the three H's, those three H's directly influence the cumulative risk of the population. The first one is healthcare, not only healthcare access, but healthcare quality. The second one is housing. Where you live truly determines your health. And the third one I had to label because I needed to find a third H is that homes of learning. The quicker children get back into normality and in regular schools, the better the family is off in terms of functioning. So those three H's directly create that, and the lack of those or the deficiencies in those, as David mentioned, in terms of systems, directly influence health and influence the risks. Thirdly, the stressors that communities in the Gulf Coast, and you would say, well, why are they so special? Disasters happen everywhere. But the third thing that communities in the Gulf Coast experience is that interconnectedness between environmental stressors and non-environmental stresses, and you hear that theme throughout the proposals. And then lastly, the issue of disparities, environmental threats, and healthcare and the health burden really are the connection at the intersect of why these people are so uniquely vulnerable. And so you'll hear these themes in my presentation. I have no relationships to disclose. And so who really are we? This is a quote from Stephanie Guappe and Giovanna Cantatore, and it says it so aptly, that a fish is only discovers its need for water when it is no longer in it. Our own culture is like water for the fish. It's like water for us. It sustains us, we live and breathe through it. And so for us, our emphasis is on cultural diversity around the Gulf Coast, of where we speak so many languages. There is, and you've heard it from Dr. Birnbaum, such an urgent need for taking a holistic approach. So if you come in as a researcher and wanting to do something that's discipline-specific, it might satisfy that specific area of research, but it will not get that answer to those complex questions. So while indeed it's one continuous state of disaster and state of vulnerability, really six significant disasters have struck the Gulf Coast since 2005, from Katrina, Rita, Gustav, Ike, Isaac, and the oil spill. The inequities that exist before Katrina make people, both rural and urban, and particularly those communities, even more vulnerable post-disaster. Many of those fishing communities, and this is important to understand, while the nation has watched the inefficiency and the destruction of the levees, still today there are communities that are not incorporated into a parish and therefore are not protected by a levee system. And so the infrastructure, as I mentioned to you already in Louisiana, is it's not what it should be. Our research indicates that there are a number of factors that influence health disparity and health functioning. These factors are not nicely A to B related, A causes B kind of thing. Rather, these factors are all very much intertwined. And on Friday, I spent time teaching a learning institute here on cultural competence. They begin with cultural competent providers and are very often forgotten issues like discrimination, issues like linguistic barriers, and not only are focused on issues of poverty. And so it is this intersect of risks between health disparities, environmental threats, and disasters that truly create that unique vulnerability. Without understanding how these three are intertwined and influence each other, it's very difficult to address and to ascertain what that vulnerability truly is. Our work indicates that there are five key issues that occur post-disaster. First is a loss of livelihood, and you've heard that mentioned. Second is direct physical adverse health effects. But third, and very importantly, and increasingly importantly, is the issue of stress and anxiety and hostility. The fear of the unknown, and I'll come back to that, still is with us today. And several of the indicators of family stress are increasing again, issues like substance abuse and domestic abuse. And so as we look at overall health quality of life, we can't forget that among all of those things are issues of trust, hope, and wellness. And all three still are present in our communities. Now, what tilts the balance and what's the difference between a natural disaster and a man-made disaster? In the case of a hurricane, as a natural disaster, there is evacuation, there's flooding, there's debris, there's effect on the built environment, on the other hand, limited access to health care, issues with employment and mental health and physical health. Now, in the case of the oil spill, while we didn't have mass evacuation, there was mass mass involvement, engulfment, so to speak, no pun intended, of oil. So something that's foreign. The dispersant and the mixtures were something that was new to the community. Yes, we had significant ecosystem damage, employment as well, as you've heard before. But cultural norms were the one that truly played a specific role. You know, throughout many of our careers, we struggle with how to make science work for communities. We struggle with issues of transparency. Despite hundreds of thousands of environmental samples and samples of seafoods, many of our communities still don't trust that, still don't trust that the air is safe to breathe and the seafood is safe to eat. Without really meaningful and sustained partnership, and here again, I know Linda will get embarrassed, but here again, I truly want to recognize her effort and her leadership for embracing community-based participatory research. It was risky when we did that, but for making that happen, because without working with our communities, we will never truly address their issues of concern. And then many people will say, well, these are communities in need. What assets do they have? They have a strong faith-based community. They have strong local community-based organizations. Those are things that if you take a little bit of effort as a researcher, you actually can work with those. And then the issue of cultural competence, and I invite you to come to our poster where we have laid out a framework for that on Tuesday. And so what have we done with the work to date? Here are the four major objectives that we're trying to accomplish. Looking at, we focused on the three community concerns. One is, what is our seafood safe to eat? Second, is our air safe to breathe? And thirdly, what will happen with the children that were born after the oil spill? And so that was kind of the quintessence of our focus. So looking at not only the regular health adversities, but other health adversities that pregnant women are faced, characterizing the exposures that they might have had, looking at the interaction of environmental and social disparities, and using really community-based participatory research approaches as an intervention strategy. And so we're engaged in three projects, and all three are currently in the field. I'm personally involved with, specifically involved with the third one, and that's the one that gives me most gratitude, particularly what happened post-ISIC, where our community health workers were able to go door-to-door and work with the affected community. These next two slides, I was going to recognize Dr. Paul Juarez. I'm not sure whether he's in the room, because we were going to talk about the ExpoSOAP as a way to address these very complex relationships on Wednesday at the Health Disparity Summit, and that summit, that day is canceled. And so here at least is a preview of what you are going to see. The emphasis at NIEHS for the ExpoSOAP couldn't be more timely, because it will help us look at how we go from individual exposures and the individual characteristics of exposure and link those to the elements that comprise community exposures. It's through looking at, working with disciplines that are far beyond mine, such as mathematicians, to discern how those big data sets indeed relate to each other so that we can better characterize exposure is what will take this research to the next step. And so why would we even look at the ExpoSOAP as a way to go? It helps us overcome traditional study design limitations, particularly in environmental epi. It helps us advance exposure characterizations when not only the characteristic of the contaminant is challenging, such as volatile organics, but the exposures happen over time and go away over time. It helps us particularly strengthen cumulative risk models. And it helps us leverage secondary data. I should say that often some communities are so deprived from basic healthcare needs that we don't have health indicator data for them. The opportunities for action are particularly in the area of predictive modeling for exposure, in looking at and quantifying communities' risk, in simulating exposure when the exposure has been long ago, something that we grapple with in environmental health all the time, and in linking health outcome with environmental data, whether it's spatially or more geographically. But particularly, it gives us a platform for community-based participatory action. When you work with communities for decades, you know they tell you one thing. They are very polite and very accommodating and very patient when you want to answer a research question. But their needs are immediate, and their needs cannot wait for the answers of our research, no matter how scholarly it is. And so we're excited that in addition to research, we'll be able to build capacity in these three areas. First, to deploy a competency-based trained community health worker corps across the Gulf, embed those health workers in primary care clinics so that there's a direct link and a navigation for communities between their healthcare needs and the services that are available. Second, that we can take environmental health knowledge early enough, but that we will work with teachers of high schools, public high schools around the Gulf, to embed environmental health as a core part of the curriculum, and that we will work with junior and seniors in high schools across the Gulf to actually take them on field trips, in addition to doing research with us in the lab, and have them see environmental health in action. And then lastly, to support family wellness with working with first-time mothers, and many of whom indeed are still children. So where do we go from here? Focusing on resilience, but particularly looking at both the biological component but the psychosocial component of that, and you'll see some of that in a poster here as well. Embedding gene-environment interaction work, but alongside anthropological methods. And why we know that the plethora of research is exploring why some communities recover better than others, none have actually looked at the cultural diversity and how cultural diversity influences recovery, and that's part of what we'll do next. I want to leave you with a visit, not for research purposes, but we joined our community right after Hurricane Isaac to see how they were doing. And as we walked with them from door to door. This is what one of the people told us. I guarantee you, I will live in that house again. His house was destroyed again. And cook my own seafood again. And so I want to leave you with those words. No matter what definition of resilience we use, this is my definition of it. Thank you.